you just have any kind of final thoughts, anything that we haven't covered that you think is important to get on the record, either in terms of your life, your public service work, the case?
I think, so far as my life, I don't think that the case took a lot of out of me so far as time that I could give to my family, and I regret that. I mean, I deprived my family, had a wife and daughter. I did not give them the time that a husband and a father should give. I put a lot of time there, and it was something that had to be done. Somebody had to do it. That was possibly as much of a regret as anything else, to desert your family for an issue that never should have existed. And that bothered me. And I'm not as bitter. I mean, don't think I'm wrong. I'm a pauper now, and I'm going to die a pauper. But the fact that I'm getting $2,000 to $3,000 a year less than I would have had the promotion been there, if it corrected something that needed correcting, then this doesn't bother me, because I don't miss any meals unless I want to. Yeah. But I think this is something that, yes, do I need the money? Yes. Did I want the money? Yes. But would I have done it the same thing over again under the same circumstances? I would not have done the same thing. I think I was a failure in the whole structure on one issue. There was a time when demonstration was popular and effective. And I believe I could have recruited 1,000 people and surround Rick's Hall, that was the extension headquarters, so that nobody could get in and out. And I think we could have gotten some quick result. But I and the other 4 or 5 person that was providing leadership believed that we could solve, get the problem corrected without that. And I feel that I, on to that extent, this was my responsibility. I alone could have changed that, and I didn't. And I think about that a lot, that why didn't I?
Right.
And I wonder what would have been the result. Would that have prevented going to court? I don't know. But the other, during that same time, there were demonstrations being held, and you got almost immediate results. And I think that we could have done similar. But I was, number one, I thought that we could do it without it. Number two, I was fearful that most of the people out there would be very few cooperative extension employees in the group. See, if you didn't have cooperative extension employees and agricultural extension then in the group, it would be a failure. I don't care what else you did. To me, inwardly, it would have been a failure. And I was afraid that they didn't have the courage to do that. Mm-hmm. And there was a degree of fear there that
you didn't have the base.
I just didn't feel like. I thought if we could have gotten 15, it would be the maximum.
Yeah.
If we could have gotten that, I doubt if we could have gotten more than 8 or 10.
Yeah.
And that would have been a disaster in my opinion. But we would have had the total number there, but it would not have been us.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that would have done more at that time than far more than what we did.
In a sense, you played by the rules. Trusted the system.
I played by the rule and I lost. Well, I won't say that I lost. I don't know that I lost,
yeah.
But I didn't accomplish what I think could have been accomplished quicker.
Well, you'd mentioned that your wife passed in 1987.
Yeah.
Which was, 3 years or so before the final end of the suit, which is just I mean, it strikes me as tragic that she wasn't able to see the end of it as well. I mean, I'd imagine it must have been her struggle as well.
She struggled. I mean, she knew that I was gone all the time. And when vacation time came, I'd never go. My daughter teased everybody now that I didn't know what a vacation was. I thought a vacation was a long weekend. And that was the extent that I had a vacation. And we had to went to Florida for vacation, leave Thursday evening, come back Monday morning or Tuesday morning at the latest, and back on the job working. But that, because the next weekend, I would end up, next week, I'd have to take a day or two off on this.
Right.
So it was a case that I deserted my family to a large extent. Mm-hmm. And we just, that I regret. But that's a sad part about it.
Mm-hmm. I'm not supposed to, you know, as a good oral historian, my job isn't to editorialize, but, you know, just to ask, you know, leading or neutral questions. But a couple things you mentioned really struck me as, in some ways, the what I think of as the real costs of racism that people just, white people, have a hard time understanding. And the two things you mentioned are your friend on his deathbed having to think about you know, this case, you know, robbing him of his final moments of what, you know, he should be thinking about his family, and you know, and that's a, you know, that's white privilege right there, is that we don't have to think of those kinds of things. And then the other thing, as you mentioned, is just, while maybe your case was decided in your favor, I mean, what sort of victory is that to have to make the kind of sacrifices that you did?
It was, for me individually, I don't know. I don't know if it was a victory for the state. I mean, I'm sincere. I don't know if the state really won. We won the case, but everything has been going down since then. So did we really, what is it we won, other than the fact we proved to the world that we were being mistreated?
Right.
But that's the only thing that I can say we won. The extension service, the cooperative extension service, for the 5 to 10 years afterward, did not move forward to the extent that it could.
Yeah.
And sadness exceeded the gladness, in that there were so many steps along the way that the Cooperative Extension Service could have ended the suit. It never had to go that far. But they refused to yield in one inch. And so it required going to court to get this done. And this is a sad part about it. And the court does not change the mind of people. See, we know that we were dealing with the same mind that was there before. They were just covering it and doing it in another way. And there again, the employment and promotion, I get the promotion, the ratio of promoting female over male, black female over male, was pretty obvious. Call it what you want, but the black female has never been a threat to the system.
Mm-hmm.
It's the black male that has been a threat to the system. The white female has never been a threat. It's the white male that's always one that put the lid down.
Right.
And so because of that, that bothered me. It still bothers me today when I see people who were with the Cooperative Extension Service, they were forced out. And I looked at a young girl in green, young lady in green kind of, who was destroyed by the Cooperative Extension Service, and that I think that when they finished, she was not able, that she made an error, she committed a wrong, but she wasn't able, I don't think she had been able to work for the state since. They destroyed her. But the situation here was far greater. I had to resign from the Corps of Extension Service, but that's it. My point is, and you could find other situations in the state where if a black violated the rule a little bit, it was termination and destruction. Right. And a white tapped on the wrist and said, don't do it anymore. Right. Or you may have to go out of extension service, but you can resign. Uh-huh. And so your record is still clean. And but the black with a... I don't think that, I don't know. You had a fella in there that followed Blaylock. He was with the economic department. I believe he changed it to some extent. Because he was one of those guys that I think was would never have been a part of what took place earlier. I mean, after all these years, you forget names. But he was head of the extension. He was the extension director, corporate extension director. He was one that came out of the economic department. The others came from other areas. But I just think he was would have been fair had he been there earlier.
Yeah.
I don't think we ever would have gone to court. And there was another assistant director who was killed in an accident coming from Rocky Mount, Smith, I believe his name. Had he lived, we never would have gone to court. Had Smith lived, I don't think we ever would have gone to court. He was a local boy. But I don't think we ever would have gone to court because he would have put pressure on people to make the adjustments to do what was right. But that you look at those kind of things, and maybe it was intended that we go this distance, because here's a person that I think would have done better. He didn't get there. Here's another one was there, got killed before anything could happen. He was without a doubt, Smith, I believe his name was Smith, he was the second in command, but he was, I wouldn't say he was a racist, I think that would be the wrong term. He believed in racial separation,
yeah,
but he believed in a degree of fairness, that was real fairness. I'm not talking about black fairness and white fairness. I'm talking about the word fairness, yeah. I think, what he believed in. And I think it would have been good had he lived.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think we have accomplished that much. I'm not sure some of the people that were still in there who retired, I don't think we changed the mentality of the Corporate Extension Service very much. I could be wrong, but I don't think they did. I think what the changes that were made, it was made based on the fear of the U.S. Supreme Court coming back on us.
Yeah.
But other than that, there were no changes. I think this is the sad part of it.
They at least had to think about what it would cost them down
the road. That's it. And I think the loss...
Which is something. You
know, yeah, I mean, the mindset it into a lot of them, I think, went with them to the grave, to those who are dead. That didn't change. I don't think Dr. Hyde changed.
Mm-hmm.
But now, as I told you earlier, I still respect him because he was the suit started while he was on his watch, but he never cut my salary increases down. He said ugly things about me, but didn't cut my salary increases down. But my point is, I can live with that. To me, he was the kind of person that you kind of halfway had to respect. Now, a lot of people didn't like him. I didn't, but I respected him. And I think that's far more important. I liked and respected Blaylock, but it turned around that my respect for him just went almost to zero. I mean, when you stand up there and said race had nothing to do with something like that, no. And then when he came here And with the salary situation as it was, this was, and said there was no discrimination in this. I mean, legitimized not giving blacks a salary increase. And you, the extension director, somewhere along the line, you should have said, no, let's come out and have somebody, that your supervisor, come in here and evaluate the program, see who is performing. Set something, do something. But he did nothing to even pacify the blacks. He did absolutely nothing. And this, to me, is represent where he was and where he stayed. Mm-hmm. That is a sad part, and I hate that. That's the, I see him now when the current Commissioner of Agriculture was elected. We both were there, because I worked strenuously in her campaign. But we both were there. We shook hands, and we both grinned. I still can't forget, and I don't know whether he remember or not. I have no way of doing that. Yeah. But I think that the state is better off as a result of what we did than it would have been had we not done it. I think the state would have been even better off had they made those changes, those correction without going to court.
Yeah.
I think everything would have been better had the heart change, the mindset had moved to the extent that those corrections could have and would have been made without that. And okay, come on with your next question. I get carried away sometimes.
No, I was just kind of wind it up and say, is there any last thing that we didn't cover?
I don't think somebody made a statement that would you be on the city council now if this hadn't happened. I think I would have.
Yeah.
I don't think that made one different. It made any different, rather. But what it has done, and this is the thing that is interesting, that the two black agents, male and female, I'm the male, contribution to the community exceeds, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, about 5 or 6 white agents. They had, once they retired from the extension service, with the exception of Gene Stason, nobody has provided any leadership. That's it.
They just retired.
They retired, they was out there, but they weren't respected as leaders. But the home economist, who is still lives across the street from me, the two of us are looked on not from just black, but black and white. Just last year, I was named the man of the year for Union County.
Wow.
And here you're talking about 123,000 people here, and you are named the man of the year, not man of the year for black, but man of the year for Union County. And she has received a similar award a few years earlier. But we didn't, it suggests to me that at some point, somebody in the Cooperative Extension Service from way back then, if they were said to some of the agents now or someplace that we apologize and that things are going to be fair from here on in, that would make all the difference in the world to those of us who are still alive. Yeah. It would not impact us financially or any otherwise, but it would say that at least I'm sorry or said something. But we haven't heard a word. And I think that's worthy of some statement as from somebody after all these years and what we went through. They know the suffering that we went through.
But even with the final payments and all, there was no acknowledgement of any kind of...
No. None. Still haven't admitted that they were wrong. they have yet to admit that they were wrong. They were elated when the judge in Raleigh said nothing, everything clean.
But
we were lucky to get the judge in Richmond, that one judge deviate, or we never would have gotten to this.
Mm-hmm. Pump it up.
That's right. That's the only way we got there. And when you think about all that and all the thing you went through getting there, in fact, I don't allow myself to think about it any more than I have to. I think about the fact that I did not give to my family what I could have and would have and should have. And when I think about the statement that D.O. Ivey made on his deathbed, just those are the things that stand with me strongly. And when I think about those, when I lose sleep on thinking about this, those are the kind of things that cause me to lose sleep. It's a degree of regret and a degree of, I don't know, I think sometimes the degree of anger that creeps up. And this is when I hate me, when I allow myself to get angry. And as the situation I mentioned earlier in Boone, when I made that statement about, I don't appreciate me when that happened. I mean, I just hate me. Well, I don't necessarily hate me, but I don't appreciate me at all when I allow my temper, I allow my emotion to carry me beyond that point. There are times when a black person was with the Farm Bureau. He came here, and I still think that he came here to get some information from me that was going to be shared outside of the black community. And I told him flat to go to hell, and I walked away and went on about my business. And he just got in his car and went back to Raleigh, because I told him I didn't want to be bothered.
Was this somebody you think sent by the lawyers during the suit? No,
I think this is somebody sent by the court, the extension people. Yeah, that was before the suit got real going, that he came here. He said that wasn't so. He has told other people that was not so. He came to help. But nothing he could have done to help. The only thing he could have done would get me to say something, he can take it back to somebody. But
he wasn't ostensibly doing an oral history and everything, was he?
No. He was with another organization, yeah. But he had at one time worked with the Cooperative Extension Service. And I shouldn't have done what I did.
Yeah.
But at that time, there were so many things hidden that I lost control of myself, because he asked the wrong question, and I just flew off. And I told him, he said, well, you know, somebody want to fire you. I told him, frankly speaking, I don't give a damn.
Yeah.
I said, but get one thing straight. He said, what's that? I said, tell them to hurry, because I want to die rich. And got in my car and went on about my business. And that was the end I heard of that, because he feared, and I didn't harbor any animosity towards him, but I felt that he was a tool in the black community, just as I feel that when I sent out letters, somebody would always get it to the administration. It was that kind of thing that happened, and you have to learn to live with that. And this is where the sadness comes. The real sad part about this whole thing, that I didn't mention, I said this, after we changed our name to the Friends of 1890. That's the only way we could get through the suit, because we merged the organization. The Friend of 1890. 1890 is the 1890 Land Grant University,
okay.
The black university, 1890.
Right.
And you could be, if you want to join the Friends of 1890, you could. Don't care whether you're white or not. But no white person is going to leave NC State to join the group that created ENT.
Right.
And we had that. And after the suit was over, and a few years later, some of the young white black agent with a void getting involved. They thought everything was all right. They were discouraged from getting involved, and they didn't. And then decided we'll change the name to Minority or something like that. And they dropped the word Friends of 1890, and they've had individuals after individuals kicked out of the Corporate Extension Service. So this wasn't done. It was may have been encouraged by the administration, but this was what we did to ourselves, what they did to themselves. Yeah. And I think that's a part of the loss, part of the gain that we didn't make,
right,
would have been made, because that was there. See, the attorneys that represented us had already asked us if we were requested, would we go to other land-grant universities as a friend of 1890s, other 1890 universities, and let them know what we have done.
Mm-hmm. Other states.
Yeah, and we agreed. Yeah. But before we could really get this cranked up, they terminated the Friends of 1890 no longer exists. Now, that hurt some of us,
yeah,
and I'm included.
That was the name that you chose for yourself?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't go to ENT. I'm a graduate of Hampton.
Right.
So my point is, and Hampton is a private institution, not a land grant.
Yeah.
But agriculture was there at that time. And the state of Virginia, I think they had the shared. Virginia State would get part of the land grant money, and Hampton was getting a part. But this was something that you could hang your hat on forever,
yeah,
and they got rid of that. And when they dropped that, you drop seemingly the interest of the attorneys that represented you. You just drop the whole thing. That's right.
Power, yeah.
And then some of us, we, even though retired, we were regulars with that. We met with them from at regular, and was financially and otherwise. But when they dropped that, I said,
mm-mm. Did other states pick up and try to pick the other agents?
They never did.
Like, it would have been a slam dunk case once you'd established the precedent.
It could have and should have, but now this is what they did, or some individual did it. Now, you had some of the other land grant universities, some of the other states made some changes as a result of what we did. Now, it impacted some of the other states more than did North Carolina, but they knew it was coming, and
right,
I've heard others say that it was that case that made them start changing their mind and their mood. So I think it benefited black agents in the 17th southern state. So no question there. I think it was widespread.
Yeah. But nobody else initiated a campaign to parallel what you did.
No, that never happened.
Yeah.
There was talk about it would have if that name hadn't been changed.
Yeah. I suppose part of the reason, too, is that you started the case while you were still an employee.
Yeah.
If other, the other agents who in other states, I guess it would have meant them beginning their involvement probably after they'd retired, when they're in their 70s.
But no, they had an opportunity to, you would involve both the employed and the retired. So you wouldn't separate the two.
Yeah.
And it was an opportunity, but you need a vehicle. Now, they had some individuals that stood out and did some in some of the other land-grant universities, but an 1890 university, but not to pull together the group as we did. And I think if we hadn't changed the name, we could have done more of that, because some of the attorneys had indirect connection with some of the other universities, had already been, was talking with us about if we would do this.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was a golden opportunity, and we dropped the ball. And when you drop a ball like that, you can't pick it up. Once you drop it, it's gone forever.
Yeah.
And I think some of the things that happened at ENT now, positive, have some bearing on that. I mean, I think ENT benefited from it, the School of Agriculture. But I think the other 89 institutions lost. But I have to be impressed with Mississippi. The state of Mississippi contributes percentage-wise more to the 89 institutions than North Carolina does.
I think that's come out because of the Ayers case. That's been a battle.
Yes, I said, wow.
And but, I think that's a battle maybe that might even be longer than your battle.
But
I know that the Ayers case was still going on when I was there in the 90s. It goes back to the 60s.
It's a kind of thing, though, to me that what does it take to get some people to change their mind, their attitude, and their approach to justice? What does it take? I mean, when that time you can do so little and gain so much, but they won't do that. I heard a person say once that if a person had the courage to apologize and say, I'm wrong, it takes a much bigger man to do that than it does one to keep going, mm-hmm. and knowing that he was wrong, but I'm not going to admit it. And I think, I wonder if that's the case, then if that's the situation, we have a lot of little men in big positions, and that's unfortunate. And once we get a good person, what do we do to keep him? I don't know. But I think the experience there, I've been told years ago quite frequently, why don't you sit down and write a book? I said, the answer is no. I said, my concern is not yesterday, it's today and tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And I never took the time to do it.
But what if your reflections on yesterday would benefit somebody, you know, a young person coming along and reading about your experience?
Well,
I mean, it seems like the younger generation of agricultural agents would really benefit by hearing about your experience.
See, when you look at the experience I had here with agricultural agents here, they didn't have to read a book. I would be there in person. They disappeared. They wouldn't show.
Yeah.
So that's the thing that was discouraging. But I just never thought about writing a book. I know Minnie Brown used to be she's deceased now. She used to persuade me. I mean, she stayed on me regular. Write a book.
Yeah.
And I would tell her, I'm sorry. And I don't think I ever had time. I feel about writing a book, I could have taken the time. Similar to the way I feel about golf. The city of Monroe has a golf course.
Yeah.
And the golf pro and others there used to beg me, come on out, we'll cheat a little bit. You won't have to do what everybody else does. But, I mean, it was just good sport. I knew that I could have gone out there. They would have done everything in the book to teach me to play golf.
Right.
I said, when I get time, I'll go. And I used to lie about it, but I stopped lying now. I'm not going. I mean, from 1975 until the 90s, I was going to play golf. Early 90s, I was going to play golf. But I just stopped saying it. I said, no, I'm not. But it isn't that I don't think I would enjoy it. It's that I feel that I can make better use of my time. Now, that's the whole bottom line. Because last night I was in Raleigh from 5 to 7, but that was political. But Tuesday and Wednesday I'd be in Raleigh again. But this would be, I serve on a board of a nonprofit that worked primarily to help disadvantaged. And I'm tied up, everywhere I look, I'm on one of those boards. And I give a lot of my time and energy to doing that, the benefit that I can give, the help that I can give, the disadvantage. I'm disadvantaged myself, but the if they don't know it's coming from me, I enjoy giving it.
Yeah.
But I don't want them to ever know that I'm making a contribution. I want to do it, but don't worry about who is doing it. That makes sense. You get mm-hmm. some of the thing you need, and this is what I like. This is the kind of life that I think I should live. Mm-hmm. And this is what I want to do. When I retire, if I ever do, that's what I want to retire from. That would be the kind of retirement that I think I would enjoy.
Yeah.
But right now, I work from 4 to 12 hours a day. And with exception of when I work for the city, it's all on volunteer for disadvantage.
Right.
But that's a part of me. I had the opportunity to, when I retired, there were people in South Carolina, swine producers, who used to come here, and I went over there, went to South Carolina a couple of times. They would guarantee me 2 days a week, every week of my life, if I would serve as a consultant and work with them. And I said, no. But that was not what I wanted to do. If that were the situation, I would have completed those other 8 or 10 hours of my graduate work and go and start at the community college.
Yeah.
But that was not what I wanted to do. I'm doing what I want to do.
You had mentioned wanting to show me a couple things.
Okay.
Let's
do that. Let's do that. Let's go to the run by the restroom. I forgot they haven't been to the restroom lately.
Right. Let me just clean up here.
Okay.
In fact, this is a